Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Yeah, when I first saw that bikini top on her, she's popping right out of the South Georgia water. Thought, oh good lord, she had them long tail legs, couldn't help myself, so I walked up.
Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd for show 67, Mr. Boyd.
Hey, Mr. Wally, how you doing today, man? It is a, you know, once again, yeah, show number 67. Should be a great one, man. I'm excited about today's show for, you know, personal reasons. I have a great guest on that I'm looking forward to talk to. Eastern Washington Eagles style. And so, man, I'm excited about this show.
Oh, we've got not only our normal two guests, but we're adding a third tonight here for show 67. So much going on in the sports world. If you're tuning in, you're going to get the likes of a good friend of the program, Paul Gackle, right out the gate in about 5 minutes, the Bay Area reporter from Gackle Report. And then going back up to the Pacific Northwest, the Seattle area, Art Teal joining us one more time from Sports Press Northwest. And as Sean Boyd was just talking about, an Eastern Washington Eagle on the football team. Ronnie Hamlin, a great linebacker for the Eagles, who are number one ranked and had the first college football game of the year on national TV.
Man, can you believe that? Ranked number one in the country. I can believe that because they've done an awesome job the past few years. And, of course, in 2010, the national champions in Division I AA. So I am excited about, you know, this young man coming on the show and, you know, again, getting a chance to spread our wings, if you will, Eagle style. So, man, this should be a good one.
Lots going on in the sports world. As always, Sean, where do we start before we get Gackle on here? We know we're going to get into NFC West and AL West, a little bit of football, a little bit of baseball with Paul Gackle. We had a good weekend, did you and I? Of course, I was working up at Eastern for the ESPN broadcast. You were working at the new Levi's Stadium for Fox Sports, the preseason game in Santa Clara. Let's go.
Well, we'll start with me. Since we talked a little bit about Eastern, I'll let you talk about that in a minute. But, man, I had a good time down in Santa Clara. First time getting a chance to take a look at the new digs, if you will, for the San Francisco 49ers. And it's everything that it is cracked up to be as far as a new stadium is concerned. I mean, it has all the bells and whistles that you could possibly imagine. There is fan player relations as the, you know, the players come out onto the field. It has wide corridors. It has everything as far as ordering your food. If you want to order your food from your seat, you can. It shows you where the shortest lines for bathrooms and concessions are, all of those cool things. But more importantly, what the game brought. And, you know, I think that, you know, I was talking with somebody today about this because they asked me, they said, how'd you like the new stadium, Levi Stadium? And I thought, well, you know, fan base wise, it seemed like the fans were sitting on their hands a little bit. And what I mean by that is, you know, it was almost likened to a new house. You have a new house and you have fresh carpet. One of the things that you don't want to do is you don't want to mess things up. And I think that 49er faithful, you know, was pretty quiet throughout the game. Just not, you know, kind of falling into the nostalgia, if you will, Sean Wally. And outside of that, you know, I believe that, you know, it's going to be a great home field advantage for the San Francisco 49ers, once, you know, all that newness, that new car smell, all of that stuff wears off. But, man, there were some things that, you know, that struck me as different. There are 8 floors, Sean Wally, in the press box, for Levi's Stadium. Can you believe that?
8 levels. That's ridiculous.
Yeah. You know, 8 levels. I mean, I caught the elevator up to the 8th level and, you know, I get there to the top and get a chance to see where the media sits. And, you know, it looks like, you know, you're in a skyscraper looking down onto the field, even though there's a great vantage point everywhere. You know, there are those wide corridors, cafeterias, even the types of cuisine was a lot different. And so, you know, that was amazing as well. But it kind of felt like an office building slash, man, how can you put it? Office building slash being at the game slash something different. You know, there was just something about it that made it a little different. So, you know, the verdict's still out for me on how well this is going to be for the 49ers. But I mean, from looks, you know, this stadium looks it looks spectacular, you know, with the mountains and the Piedmont Mountains in the background. And, you know, of course, Great America right next door. And I think it's going to be a great place once, you know, the fans figure out what it is that they want to do.
Well, we've got a guy waiting on the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines that knows quite a bit about 49er football and all things Bay Area. Let's welcome in big-time guest number one tonight, Paul Gackle of GackleReport.com. Paul, thanks for your time.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Great, Paul. Man, it seems like every other week we're having you on the show, man. We're going to put you on this payroll, and we love having you. So here we are. I was just talking about the San Francisco 49ers and the new digs. Have you had a chance to get out there yet?
I haven't actually been in the stadium itself yet. No, I have not. Looking forward to that moment.
So what are some of the things that you are hearing as far as the new stadium, how the players are handling it, how the fans have kind of given an idea on how I thought the fans are receiving the new stadium? What are some of the things that you're hearing?
Well, I mean, initially it was a lot of bad news coming out of Levi's Stadium. There's, you know, the traffic story was the big story after the grand opening. The Seattle Sounders were in town to play the earthquake. So that kind of dominated the news early, but I think they sort of got some of those problems ironed out when they were actually playing football, because people are kind of know what to expect and are maybe leaving early and getting down there and tailgating and taking the light rail. A lot of space in the concourse. I hear that they really enjoy that. It's just really fan friendly in that regards. And obviously, last week the big news was that the turf, you know, needed to be replaced because it was Jim Harbaugh had to pull the team off the field during practice. They had an open practice in front of the stands, and some guys were slipping. The turf wasn't in very good shape, but it looks like they got it down. And we didn't hear too much about it yesterday against the Chargers.
Hey, Paul, I'm not sure if you have your mouth to the receiver or not. It sounded like you were coming in a little bit faint. Can you talk to me a little bit more?
Yeah, hold on. Let me just kind of switch spots in the house. Sometimes that helps too. You hear me any better?
Just a little bit. So we're having a little technical difficulty with Paul Gackle. We'll try it once again in just a minute here. But it sounded like Paul was talking about, you know, some of the, you know, the ins and outs, some of the bad things that have been talked about as far as the stadium are concerned, one of them being the traffic coming in and out of Santa Clara. And, you know, that was one of the things that should have been fixed in the beginning, you know, when you're having a new stadium, especially coming from Candlestick, because that was the biggest problem was it was one way in and one way out. It seems like Santa Clara is, very similar to the traffic being one way in and one way out. And then the other thing that was talked about that's been talked about as a negative, Paul, I believe. Are you there, Paul?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you a little bit better. One of the other negative things that has been talked about is the sod on the field. And so there's a big chunk of field that was taken out this week to make things better just for this preseason game, and then they're going back to work on it today.
I was saying that, and I guess you didn't hear me. It was breaking up a little bit. But, last week, Jim Harbaugh actually had to pull the players off of an open practice. They had the practice open there for the fans. And he grabbed the team and yanked them out. Stevie Johnson slipped. And, you know, you don't want your players going down the preseason. I mean, the preseason is as much as anything, is about trying to stay healthy and not get hurt. And the last thing you want is to, you know, lose players slipping on your new field. So yeah, they did a nice job. They were able to resod it in 72 hours. And we didn't really see that become part of the storyline yesterday. So hats off to the grounds crew and whoever did the work down there, because no big disasters anyway.
Paul Gackle joining us from GackleReport.com. And Paul, what's your take on the issues they're having on the field in San Francisco, be it offensive issues, they're not scoring many points, and they've had a few injuries to deal with, and that's never a good thing. But how much of it is just vanilla preseason and maybe there really are some issues in 49er land.
You know, up until yesterday, I was saying just these seem like they're vanilla preseason issues because, you know, the games don't count for anything, and obviously you're not going to go out there and give away your game plan for a preseason game. You're not going to really show anything. You're not going to really strategize. That being considered, the thing that I was really concerned about watching the game yesterday was how badly they were getting beaten up on the offensive line. And since Jim Harbaugh's been with the Niners and dating back to his time with Stanford, you know, they love to bully people up front. They've been the best running team on first down. So much of what they do depends on that line. And I was pretty surprised yesterday to see them really get mauled, kind of manhandled by the Chargers. That's the first unit. Particularly, you know, Mike Iupati, a two-time Pro Bowler, just didn't look like he was ready for showtime. And then there's some questions on the right side of that line, obviously, with Anthony Davis being out. Now he's supposed to be ready to go for the preseason. And then Alex Boone's holding out, so they've gone with Joe Looney. But the line just didn't really look great to me yesterday. So that is something that I'm concerned about a little bit, because while play calling is going to be vanilla during the preseason, you still want to win the fight on both sides of the line. And they just didn't look that great on the offensive line. Now, defensively, I was really impressed that they were able to there was a moment where Colin Kaepernick fumbled, and the Chargers got the ball right there in the red zone, and they were able to shut him down on third and short and fourth and short. And I was like, okay, this is the 49ers defense. This is still the 49ers defense that I've known. Also, some questions with Colin Kaepernick under a lot of pressure yesterday. And I always wondered, because I'm not seeing, you know, the tape with every, you know, the what they call it, the all 22 or whatever it is, where I can see everybody on the field. But I'm always concerned when a quarterback's under that much pressure and he's holding on to the ball, not really able to get rid of it. Because guys like Drew Brees, Tom Brady, you know, Peyton Manning, they face pressure on every down too. But they get rid of the ball in under 3.5 seconds. So is it that last year we heard a lot about how Kaepernick, you know, didn't have the targets out there at receiver, so nobody was getting open? Well, now they have guys out there. So was it yesterday that the bull rush was just coming so fast you really couldn't get it off? Or is he not picking up the soft spots in the zone when the rush is coming? Those are a couple questions I'll have looking forward.
Now, Paul, in regards to Colin Kaepernick, do you think it's his decision-making and willingness to pull the trigger that's the issue? Because they do have great weapons on the outside. Anquan Boldin, Stevie Johnson, Michael Crabtree, Vernon Davis. And you've got to be able to find somebody open, you would think.
You would think it's too early to say that. I'm not after, you know, a preseason game. Do I just want to write the book on Colin Kaepernick? But to me, what we saw yesterday does at least, I think it frames the narrative going into this season about whether Colin Kaepernick is going to turn into one of those quarterbacks who, when the rush comes, is he going to find the spot in the zone? Is he going to find the open man? Because that's really what the greats do. You look at Tom Brady, and it doesn't matter who his receivers are. It seems like he gets rid of the ball and he finds somebody. Colin Kaepernick, you know, that's part of the problem too. When you're so athletic, you almost want to hold on to it for another second because you're so used to being able to take off and make something happen with your feet, with your athleticism. But he's going to need to become the type of quarterback where he can find where the open man is. And it's tough to say without having access to the full videotape. And just, you know, it's really four possessions in one preseason game. So I don't want to write too much on it, but it's definitely something that we need to keep our eye looking on as we watch the 49ers going forward.
Paul Gackle joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And yeah, Paul, you know, you hit a few great points. And at one point yesterday in the second quarter, we're talking about an offense that was very beleaguered as far as the point totals were concerned. I believe it was 64-6 up until they got their first touchdown. And so, you know, that is.
And the yards were like 70-14 after the first quarter or something like that.
Yeah. So, you know, a grave concern. But, you know, again, we're going to keep the old adage that it's preseason and maybe things will get better for them, because let's face it, this is a talented 49ers team and there's no reason that they shouldn't come out and take care of business, especially at the beginning of the season.
And, you know, Jim Harbaugh, he is always going to have tricks up his sleeves. He's a schemer. He likes to strategize. They like to do things. And they're not going to show anything other than their standard offense in a preseason game. Anything that they have planned. Like, remember when Kaepernick first came in 2012 and all of a sudden towards the end of the play, towards the end of the season and into the playoffs, they start running all this read option stuff, right? That really baffles defenses. So if he has anything up his sleeve in terms of how he's going to use this offense with some of the new pieces he has, Stevie Johnson, Bruce Ellington, anything that he might be devising, he's not going to show us here in the preseason. So that was a very straightforward vanilla offense that they were running, and it allows the Chargers, you know, to play them pretty straight up. So he might have some tricks to keep the defense honest when we get into the actual game. So it really is difficult to read too much into it. Having said that, this is a team, obviously, they have Super Bowl aspirations. It's almost Super Bowl or bust. Especially with the Seahawks grabbing the Super Bowl last year, the Niners really want to come out and reassert themselves as a team to be in the NFC. And when you have those type of aspirations and you see what we've seen from them so far in the preseason, you have to be concerned somewhat.
Well, definitely. And of course, the San Francisco 49ers are looking to do just that, make themselves even more prominent in the NFC West. Now, let's shift across the bridge here, a tale of two cities in the Bay. And, of course, what I'm talking about are the Oakland Raiders. And, of course, the Oakland Raiders have done a lot of off-season acquisitions as far as free agency is concerned to make themselves a little bit more valid, one of those being quarterback Matt Schaub. Now, of course, we've heard earlier today, that Matt Schaub has a little bit of tendonitis in his elbow, I believe. Is that something to be concerned about for the Raiders moving forward?
Well, I would say yes. It should definitely be concerned moving forward. Your quarterback, we're not even into the regular season yet. We've had three preseason games, and the guy you essentially brought in to take over the reins at quarterback, an elbow seems to be like it's sort of like an important part of your throwing arm. That's a pretty important part of the body for somebody who makes their living throwing the ball. So I'd be very concerned. And obviously the Raiders, tendency here you would think would be to want to downplay the news. They don't want to say right out of the gates, yeah, the guy that we brought in, his arm might be screwed up. But I would definitely be concerned if I'm a Raiders fan. It's vague. We don't really know what to make of it. I'm not a doctor, so I can't really, I don't really have a lot of expertise in that area, but it would raise some serious red flags for me. Now, having said that, Dennis Allen has already come out and said that Matt Schaub will start against the New York Jets week one. Don't be concerned. They're giving him some rest, but he's going to be ready to go when the season starts. So read into that what you will. I would be concerned still.
Yeah, concerned at the least. And so what I mean by that is this same thing happened around this time last year with Matt Flynn. It was his job to lose last year. And of course, the same type of issue, an arm issue with Matt Flynn, propelled Terrell Pryor to get the start. And of course, the season just kind of went up and down and then downhill from there. Do you see it? And I guess my question to you is do you believe that Derek Carr is actually ready to take the helm or take the keys, if you will, to, you know, this team being the Oakland Raiders moving forward?
Probably not. I mean, just because this is the hardest position in all sports to play. And so I think that I think throwing any rookie, into the fire in the NFL, I think that's a difficult position for any quarterback to be in. Now you do have your Andrew Luck, who, you know, they're basically the outliers where, you know, it seems like he was born and ready to play in the NFL day one, but I don't think Derek Carr is quite that kind of a guy. As few quarterbacks are. Any rookie quarterback that has to start week one, I would say that that's a very, very tough assignment. But having said that, you know, he's looked good at times. He's given them some reason for optimism. And, sometimes you just gotta do what you gotta do in a tough situation. I don't know if that, you know, we're still gonna wait and see if that's gonna be the case. I tell you one thing. Matt Schaub hasn't looked good. Whether it's because of his elbow, or if it's just a continuation of what we saw in Houston last year, he has not looked good in the preseason thus far. And maybe you just go, hey, let's just put the rookie out there and let him ride growth, you know, go through the growing pains and see what he can become, see how he can develop. You learn through doing. You learn on the field. But there have been rookie quarterbacks who've sort of gotten ruined by being thrown in there too early.
Now, Paul, of course, the fourth and final game of the preseason there in Oakland. The Raiders hosting the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday night, a game on NFL Network. What are your thoughts on, of course, everybody wants to stay healthy. What are the Raiders looking to do out of that contest, and what do you expect to see from Seattle?
Well, on the Raiders' end, it's going to be interesting because Derek Carr is going to get the start. So here, Chubb's been terrible. The rookie's going to get a chance. And, you know, can he go out there and win the starting job, even though the coaches say it's Matt Chubb? So I think that that's a really tough draw. That's a tough assignment for a rookie to get the Seattle Seahawks, you know, in the last game of the preseason, trying to win a job to show that he can be a starting quarterback in the NFL. He couldn't have picked a tougher draw than that. So I think the Raiders are just still trying to find out who they are and find out who can play. And I think the quarterback question is a big question, regardless of what the coaching staff says, whether or not they've named Schaub. They have named Schaub as a starter, but I would still think that everybody's eyes are on Derek Carr in this game, trying to find out if he's ready for prime time. Could he go under center week one if that's necessary? And I think if you're the Seahawks, I think you know that you're a pretty good team, and I don't think that you have to exert too much over the Raiders in your fourth preseason game. I think the Seattle Seahawks can keep pretty low-key and get ready for the season.
Paul, before we let you run, the Oakland A's, the Anaheim LA Angels, and the Seattle Mariners are all fairly close in the AL West run for the wild card and the division. How do you think this all plays out? The A's are struggling right now, only winning 3 of their last 10, while the Angels and Mariners have won 7 of 10.
I think the A's are going to be able to go out and win this thing down the stretch. I just liked what I saw over the weekend, because especially going into this series against the Angels, they were really reeling, having lost 7 of 8, I believe it was. And they were able to go up against the Angels in that series and have Sonny Gray and John Lester. They're two big arms. They're two big studs going in the first two games, almost as if it were a playoff series, and they got those wins. And I think that was huge because it reasserted why they went out and made the trade, sending Cespedes over to Boston for Lester. Obviously, the Jeff Samardzija trade as well. They wanted big arms. They wanted big pitching for big games, and John Lester went out and did that. I also think it really, really hurts the Angels that they lost Garrett Richards. I think that that's a really big loss. Now, the A's have a few injuries of their own. Sean Doolittle just went on the DL. But the A's seem to have enough depth to absorb these losses. Now, if they have any more big ones, it's going to, you know, they might reach a tipping point. But losing Garrett Richards was just, I think that that was a devastating blow for the Angels. That kid's been their best pitcher this year. So to lose him is pretty tough. Mariners are playing some great, great baseball, but I feel like they might be a little too far back in the West to actually win the division, because I don't see both the A's and Angels tanking. I think the A's can hold on. They've been there. They've done this before. They seem to fight through whatever adversity comes their way, but it should be a great race.
Paul Gackel, thanks for being on here on the Double with the Double S Express, man. This is always good to have you on as a guest. Sorry about that. But, it sounds like the Oakland A's, you know, to me as well, will definitely get things done down the stretch. There's too much pitching involved, or too much of an investment in pitching. And of course, with Sean Doolittle going down on the DL, I think it'll give him some time just for whatever the little nick or ding it is. But, they're going to need him as a closer, to close out the season. But man, we can't rule out Seattle as far as what they're doing. They're continuing to do a great job as well. But, yeah, I'm with you, man. The Oakland A's, should be able to close this one out.
Well, I certainly want to draw, the Seattle Mariners in that one game death match, that is the wild card game. I mean, can you imagine if you battle tooth and nail for the division all season long? And let's just say you lose by one game, and now you have to go into a do or die situation against Hank Dillis in a playoff game. That's incredible.
Yeah, that's a little too much for me. And I'm sure Sean Wally, of course, being up in the Pacific Northwest, that is what he is looking forward to. But for me, I'm just saying, hey, let's win this West and look forward to the 7-game series in the ALCS.
Great baseball season.
Paul Gackel, thanks for being on, man. And it's always a pleasure having you here on the Double. We'll look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks, gentlemen. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. We gotta connect, I guess after week one, and our teams are going to have, it's going to be quite a season again. So let's talk when the season gets going.
Sure will. Sure will. Paul Gackle.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, take care. There goes Paul Gackle with the Gackle Report. Always a pleasure having him on the show, talking various things. Of course, we just talked about Northern California football along with baseball as well. But, you know, Paul has a strong, strong background in golf and hockey. And so, you know, it's a pleasure having him on the show. And so coming up next, after we take this quick break, we're going to have guest number two, and that's Art Thiel. So you keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds. And since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away. And I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400, the safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to Andro400.com. Andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's go right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in sports writer Art Thiel from Sports Press Northwest, a good friend of the program. Art, thanks for your time tonight.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure.
Art, thanks for being on. And of course, man, there are some great things that are going on in the Pacific Northwest. And what I mean by that are those Seattle Seahawks are moving along and are cruising, if you will, so early in this late in the preseason, but early in the football season.
It's been remarkable. It's just like a seamless transition from last year to this, despite all the losses in free agency and the retirement here and there and some injuries. The Seahawks really have done well in filling the gaps, and these last two preseason games have been a really dominant display by the offense. You know, the offense last year, at times had trouble. Obviously when you win a Super Bowl, you can't have too much trouble, but, there were times last year when, the offense faltered and the defense had to carry them. This year, it looks like the offense could carry the defense should that be necessary.
Yeah. When you're saying the offense carrying the defense, that could not be any more accurate than what you're saying. And I mean, Russell Wilson had such a great game this past game. 3 touchdowns, 2 passing, 1 rushing, and untouched as he moved up and down the field. Art, it can't be this easy. Please tell me it can't be this easy for the Seahawks to just run the table this year.
Well, that's one of the things we were kind of asking ourselves, and this is a legitimate question in the preseason. Are the Seahawks that good, or is the rest of the NFL that bad? Because, you know, the Chargers had a suspect defense. I thought the Bears were going to put up a bit of an argument on the defensive end, but that was not the case. And, you know, you're right about Wilson being untouched. I mean, he was sacked once for a 9-yard loss. There was a communication breakdown on the old line. But the overall, Wilson really did what he wanted, slid when he had to, got out of bounds, and then made yardage upfield as he does. And he just really was just way out of harm's way. And that kind of jumps out after the weekend's injury news around the NFL, where Sam Bradford is out for the season by injuring the same knee that cost him most of 2013. And Cam Newton, I guess, had a rib fracture that they think will allow him still to play, but nevertheless, that's got to hurt a lot. So, Wilson being able to do what he does and stay healthy at it is a remarkable thing and a huge asset for the Seahawks.
Art, how much do you think Wilson's elusiveness is key, or is it that plus the fact that he's just so smart that he knows not to take those hits that a Cam Newton and the likes of RG3 take?
Well, yeah, that's one of the things that I've noticed watching the other quarterbacks around the league is that there's a macho foolishness, I think, among some of the quarterbacks. Jake Locker comes to mind. Certainly we saw this in Seattle when he was at the University of Washington. But he and RG3, Cam Newton, really take macho pride in getting that extra yard. But when you're a quarterback, no, that extra yard is not worth it because the drop between number one and number two in the NFL is typically significant. You can't afford to take that extra yard given the potential cost. So Russell understands that. He's made a solemn promise to Pete Carroll that he's not going to be diving forward. And whenever he sees the defense surrounding him when he's in the open field, he's going to slide. And he's done that very effectively. In fact, he did in a game Friday against the Bears, and the Bears got a 15-yard hit to a defenseless player because Wilson was hit when he was down. But he actually, it was a glancing blow, and I think it was kind of a dubious call, but that's what Wilson does, and he induced a 15-yard screw-up by the Bears.
Art, the Seahawks go down to Oakland and invade O.co and take on the Raiders. The biggest thing for me in my book for the Seahawks is just stay healthy. Is there anything else that they're trying to figure out against the Raiders in preseason week four?
Well, I think one of the curious storylines might be Terrell Pryor. Pryor is the number three quarterback here in Seattle. They traded a 7th-round draft pick to the Raiders when he said, I want out of here because the Raiders had acquired Matt Schaub. So he's got to prove himself because he didn't show well in 8 snaps Friday. Terrell said today that wasn't a fair showing. He's seen a lot in Pryor to like him. But I just have to wonder whether, Carroll might be sort of showcasing him to get a deal by some other team that's desperate with sudden injury to, get a trade for more than the 7th-round pick they gave up. Because I don't think the Seahawks really do need to need 3 quarterbacks, and I think they trust Tavares Jackson much more than they trust Pryor. Then again, if St. Louis came offering a 3rd-round draft choice for Tavares Jackson, is that temptation enough for the Seahawks? Maybe not within the division, but it is an intriguing possibility. So Pryor's progress will be something that everybody's going to be watching on Friday.
Art Teal joining us here on the Double. And Art, this was something that Sean and I have been talking about for the past week. And one of the things that I see with Terrell Pryor is his audition to play elsewhere. You mentioned a couple of facts, Art, as far as having Tavares Jackson. He has probably had the best preseason that he's had thus far with the Seahawks to date. And, you know, there isn't any room for 3 quarterbacks, but you're mentioning that St. Louis offering a 3rd-round possibly for Tavares Jackson. But what say you about Terrell Pryor? I mean, I say that he plays, the majority of the game, maybe 3 quarters, so that Pete Carroll can try to find, somebody out there to trade him.
Well, I think, that's plausible. I just don't see Pryor being a good enough quarterback to take a roster spot on the 53-man because there are so many other talented guys that they could use elsewhere. And last year, of course, the Seahawks got away with playing Russell Wilson the entire 16-game season because he does take care of himself. So the need for a third QB, to me, is limited, but if they could flip Pryor, you know, they might do that. But Jackson, actually, to me, has more value to a team in an emergency like St. Louis. But then again, you want to make an intra-division opponent, a team you're playing twice, stronger. And Jackson, I think, would definitely be an upgrade from Sean Hill in St. Louis or anybody else they could acquire. There certainly are other people out there like Mark Sanchez that might be available, but it just kind of depends on the price. If the Seahawks could get something, you know, high, a draft pick for either one of their quarterbacks, they might be interested. But right now, Pryor would have to have a tremendous game in Oakland, and he'll get his shot to alter the equation because Tavares Jackson is clearly the number two, and he's guaranteed $1.25 million this year.
Well, yeah, that it's definitely a great problem to have if you're the Seattle Seahawks going in to repeat as Super Bowl champions. Shifting gears now just across the street over at Safeco, the Seattle Mariners, if we would have talked a few weeks ago at this time, we would say, hey, the Mariners would probably be thinking about, you know, making a couple of adjustments, looking forward to next year. Lloyd McClendon's done a great job thus far, but look what's going on now. With the starting pitching of Hernandez, Iwakama, Paxton, and Young, the Seattle Mariners have put themselves in a position to not only have a wild card, I mean, dare I say that they actually win the AL West.
Well, certainly the Angels are looking more and more formidable. They took two out of three from Oakland, but it's not beyond the realm. You know, I think the Mariners showed something over the weekend that was intriguing. Even though the pitching has indeed been sensational, it hasn't been for the last week. The starting pitching, Felix Hernandez did not get a win on this road trip. Chris Young had trouble. So did Hisashi Iwakuma. So there was some vulnerability there that I hadn't seen collectively in that rotation. But the Mariners made up for it with 20 runs in three games against Boston. That was something we hadn't seen almost all year, is the offense coming up to pick up for the pitching, especially the starting pitching. And that has to be a little bit of a concern, I think, for Mariner fans, is Felix has had two pretty mediocre Septembers in a row here. And, you know, the easy, you know, thought is that it's fatigue from, you know, a 220-inning season. No one is saying that's what's happening now. And he may finally get a chance to play meaningful games in September for the first time in his career. So that could alter the equation a little bit. But it was, for Mariner fans, it was great to see the offense actually come through. The game Friday, I don't know if you guys paid much attention, but the Mariners were down 3-0 in the top of the ninth, two outs, two strikes, and they came back and scored five runs to win the game. That's the kind of thing that can lift the whole season.
Art Teal with us here from SportsPressNorthwest.com. And Art, exactly what you're talking about is the struggling that the starting pitching has had in the last week. But on the flip side, the good that can come of that is they're finding a way to win those games. Yes, Felix and everybody else in the rotation can do better, but they're still finding a way to bring the bats, bring the wood, and win those contests.
Well, yeah, it has been, you know, this has only been something that's happened late, but I do give the Mariners credit. The front office deserves some credit here. Lloyd McClendon said somewhere in May and June, it may have been earlier than that, he needed some more right-handed hitting. And after the trade deadline, they had four guys who were right-handed bats that were in the starting lineup that were new to the team. They got Kendrys Morales in a trade. They acquired, Austin Jackson in a trade, and they got Chris DeNorcia from San Diego in a trade. And then they called up Chris Taylor, a shortstop that had been playing very, very well in the minor leagues. And he succeeded both Nick Franklin, who was traded, and Brad Miller, who's still on the team, but was slumping at the plate. And all four of those guys hit right-handed. Now the lineup is much more balanced and they're a much more effective offensive team thanks to those trade deadline moves.
Now, Art, Thursday is a very big day for you. You have a launch party for a new book that you have co-authored with your co-pilot, Steve Rudman, called Russell Wilson's Standing Tall. Talk about the big party going on at FX McCrory's Thursday, 3 to 7 in Seattle.
Right. We're having a launch party coming up. We're all excited about it because Russell Wilson obviously has been a revelation to people in Seattle as well as the entire football world. And Triumph Books of Chicago asked us if we would be able to produce a book on Russell Wilson from our content over the past 2 years, and we said yes. So we accumulated our stories and our photos and put together what we're calling a commemorative keepsake about two astonishing years by Russell Wilson in Seattle. And it's just been, it was hectic, but we pulled it together, and we're going to have a launch party at McCrory's where many a great sports moment has been had, usually with some ale in the hand, and we hope that's going to be the case on Thursday. It's a busy sports night because not only are the Seahawks playing the Raiders in Oakland, the Washington State University team is opening against Rutgers at the Clink. So there's going to be lots of sports fans in Pioneer Square, and anybody in your listening audience who might find themselves in Seattle is welcome to come on by and buy a book.
Most definitely, Art Teal joining us here on the Double, and of course, Thursday, FX McCrory's, that is at, in, I believe, what did we say, 3 to 7, Sean Wally? 3 p.m. to 7, Art, is that what it is?
Yeah, that's correct. The book is available at Amazon.com. It's also going to be available at Costco and Barnes & Noble. So, it's $15.95 retail, and I think Amazon has discounted it to the clever number of $12.12.
$12.12.
That's awesome.
Now, Art, I know that your knowledge was definitely checked as far as, you know, following somebody for 2 years in Russell Wilson. I mean, that is a tough feat for anybody to get as much information as quickly as possible to come out. I mean, you know, was this something that you were excited about doing in the beginning, or, you know, did it become more exciting at the end?
Well, it was fun to have it done. Certainly. We had, about a month's time to pull together our content and create another, a more dramatic narrative out of it. It's just not our stories, one after the other. We made a narrative out of it. And, it was a lot of fun because, one of the things that I have known before, and this reiterated to me again, that when you're in the midst of a season, everything is about now. It's about this game, this moment, and then you lose track of some of the, things that happen over the course of the season. You know, I think some people, who saw Wilson, be called a game manager would raise an objection because in his rookie season in November, the Seahawks scored 150 points in three games. That hadn't been done in the NFL in 63 years. That was an astonishing collection of offensive feats, that, in the Super Bowl tends to dominate everything, and that game is vividly remembered by a lot of Seahawks fans and non-Seahawks fans for its complete domination. But there were other things that Russell did throughout his first 2 years here that are astonishing, especially for one so young. It's just been a remarkable ride, and that's why we certainly agreed with Triumph that it was book-worthy.
Now, Art, give us something here. Of course, this will be... Everybody hears it here first on the Double with the Double S Express. What is an insight tidbit from your book, something that people don't know about as far as Russell Wilson that you could share with us?
I think one of the things that flew under the radar, there was during his draft analysis, everyone knows that he was 5'10¾", and that was a big liability. What I don't think a lot of people knew was that his hands were the size of hands that belong to somebody 6'8". He's got a tremendous span in his hands, and that's what allowed him to be such an accurate passer and control the ball without many mistakes. Wilson has this extraordinary pair of mitts that are, if you ever see him in the game or, he's got his hands on his hips or something, take a look. And if you study him, it's almost freaky how big his hands are. And that one physical attribute, to me, is the key to his success, because he may be, you know, 6'8", but he's got hands like Karl Malone, for God's sake. So it really is an astonishing thing that I don't think people fully appreciate. And I think, you know, I think everybody understands about his unusual and uncommon maturity, his respect that he has in the huddle. But the guy is a physical specimen in ways that aren't measured by height.
Art Teal of SportsPressNW.com, thank you so much for your time. And once again, Russell Wilson, Standing Tall, the book launch party, co-authored with Steve Rudman, Thursday, 3 to 7 at FX McCrory's in Seattle. Art, we appreciate your time tonight.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
There goes Art Teal. Oh, man, you know what, Sean? Every time Art comes on here and, you know, and talks, especially talking about his book, Standing Tall, you know, talking about Russell Wilson and some of the things that, you know, he's done over the past couple of years, I can't wait. You know, definitely go on to Amazon. The book will be available on Amazon.com. Of course, co-authored with Steve Rudman, a good buddy of his. Man, are you as excited as I am?
You know, Russell Wilson is a giant among men in the NFL world, and that's has nothing to do with his height or his stature. And Standing Tall is a great title for the book because everybody talked that Russell was too short, he couldn't make it, and he's proving everybody else wrong.
Yeah, most definitely. And of course, I wouldn't pick anybody other than Art Teal, the author of this book. And so hats off to Art and Steve Rudman for putting this one together. So when we come back, guest number three on the double with the Double S Express, and that is none other than Eastern Washington University Eagles linebacker Ronnie Hamlin. So keep it locked in. You're listening to the best sports talk on the double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd, and we're going right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcoming guest number three tonight, and that is Ronnie Hamlin, senior linebacker for Eastern Washington, the Eagles. Ronnie, thanks for your time tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ronnie, how does it feel, man? You start off, you kick off college football with a Thursday morning game, and you guys take care of business. But more importantly, you're starting out the season as the number one ranked team in the country. How does that feel, man?
Oh, it's awesome. I mean, it's very honorable. It's huge. I mean, for Eastern, for Cheney, for Spokane, it's huge to have that game first in the season. You know, it's just an awesome deal.
Now, of course, there are some great things that are going on around the campus, and one of them being for the past few years, there is that red field. And when people come into Ruse Stadium, it is, you know, something that is a huge spectacle. It's a difference maker. I know that it started at Boise State with their blue field, but then what do you see as far as teams when they come in and they play on this big red field?
Honestly, I think all fields should be red, but I don't know. I mean, I've been playing on it since I've been here. I mean, I've seen Easton with grass fields, and I mean, with the red turf, I don't know. It doesn't throw me off any. I know on television it looks a little bright, but when you're out there, I mean, it's all the same, I guess.
Now, Ronnie, you played Sam Houston State on Saturday, and it was a close contest in the first half. It was a long first half. I don't know if you players really can tell. I mean, it took 2 hours for that first half. Is that something you guys can feel? I'm like, man, this is dragging on, or is it just all football and you just go until the clock says zero?
I mean, during the game, you don't really pay attention to time. You just wonder when you're going to get back on the field, you know, when the offense is going to score and defense is back on. But after the game, a couple of us were talking about it, and it was long. I mean, you're sitting there with the TV timeouts. I mean, you know, ESPN's got all the commercials and stuff. And then, I mean, it was they passed it a lot, so clock stopped a lot. So, I mean, it was a long first half.
Ronnie, what do you think what happened when the pendulum swung? It was a 21-21 game in the second quarter, and all of a sudden, late in the second quarter, there was a nice run by your running back for a touchdown, and then third quarter, you guys really took over. Was there adjustments at halftime? What happened for you guys to take over that game?
Not really. I mean, the cool thing about these guys at Eastern, I mean, they're when we go in the locker room, no matter if we're down or up, I mean, it's all calm. I mean, we know what we have to do the next half. We know what, I mean, it's just, it's a cool atmosphere to be around, you know. And when we went out there, I mean, defense held the ground. We gave the ball back to the offense to make the plays, and they did what they had to do, and it just turned out good in our favor.
Ronnie Hamlin, kind enough to join us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Ronnie, you know, this seems to be a kind of a repeated moniker for Eastern, and for us Eastern alums who are watching the games, they're nail biters. And, you know, there are a lot of points that are put on the board, but more importantly, there seems to be kind of that slow start for the offense, if you will. And then all of a sudden in the second half, you know, everything just breaks loose. The defense is clicking. The offense is clicking. What do you attest to that, the slow start? And is that something that will fix itself or rectify itself in the near future?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when next game, I mean, everything's going to get better as it goes along. It was the first game of the season. So, I mean, you're going to have – it's not – everything's not going to go perfectly like you want it to go. So, you're going to have to adjust and, you know, just play the game, play it out. So, I mean, obviously, we got the win on the first game, but we went back and we watched film like we lost the game. We made corrections like we would have lost that game. And so that's how we're going to get better from it. So the mistakes are going to get fixed, and just going to move on and keep winning games.
Now, Ronnie, Eastern Washington is no – this isn't new to them as far as to you guys, as far as being one of the top teams in the country. Of course, last year making it to the quarterfinals, and then in 2010 being the national champions. But this year's a little bit different. And what I mean by that is now you have a, you know, you have a quarterback coming in Vernon Adams. I believe he's up for the Walter Payton. He was a runner up last year for the Walter Payton Award, and looks like if things go well, he could definitely win that award. And then last year as well on the offensive side, wide receiver Cooper Kupp, who is just phenomenal. I've had the chance to watch Cooper play over the past 2 years and, you know, just amazing hands. He's this savvy receiver. So what is Eastern doing as far as understanding that, you know, we're the team to beat, and how are you guys preparing for that, you know, week in and week out?
We know, I mean, going into every game, we know that we're the Super Bowl, you know, we're the Super Bowl to a lot of teams. So we know that they're going to bring everything they got when they play us. So we go into every game, never looking over any team, prepare like it's our biggest game, you know, so play every snap like it's the last snap we got on the field, and that's how we're taking it.
Ronnie Hamlin joining us, linebacker for Eastern Washington University, the Eagles in Cheney, Washington. Now, Ronnie, what was it like when you left Timberline High School in Lacey, Washington, and you went to Eastern and you decided to play football there? What was the big difference that you felt going from high school to the college ranks?
Definitely becoming a student of the game. In high school, I mean, when you're playing in high school, you're having fun, you're running around. I mean, college is fun, but you're running around, you're just playing football. And you're not really thinking too much, not really knowing what they're going to do. You're just running around, seeing what happens, you know, and making plays. In college, you're constantly learning what the next team is going to bring on offense, and just knowing situations, knowing what's going to happen. It's really cool when you start learning the actual game of football and understanding why we do the stuff we do on the field. So that's the biggest jump, I would say.
Ronnie, is there any difference in preparation for a, say, Montana Western that you have this coming weekend, or I believe the next weekend when you face a team like the University of Washington?
No, not at all. I mean, we're going to treat every game like it's the biggest game we got, you know. We're not going to look over any opponent, and we're going to play like we're playing UW every week, or playing whoever, Montana or Montana State. It doesn't matter who we play.
Ronnie Hamlin, kind enough to join us here on the double. And Ronnie, you have that intimidating stature, those intimidating features about you. For those of you who don't know what Ronnie looks like, man, you have the golden long hair. You're standing there in the middle linebacker position, and you look very similar to one Clay Matthews. I mean, is there a reason for that long hair? I'm sure there's a story, and I believe there is a story on why you've grown the golden locks like that.
Yeah, it was back in 2010, actually. I busted my knee for the second time, and had a friendly wager with Jeff and Zach Johnson, who can grow their hair out the longest, and I ended up sticking to it for the longest, so here I am 4 years later, long hair, but...
So it's something like maybe Samson with his strength, if you will, having the long hair. Because, man, over the past year, you have done some awesome things. And right now you are embarking on a tackles record. And so, yeah, kind of give the listeners an idea on that, what this tackle record is.
It's the most at Eastern Washington. J.C. Sherritt holds it right now. I don't remember how many more I have to get or whatever it is. I think it's around 70. So, but I'm not really concerned about it. I'm worried about winning games. I'm not worried about getting the most tackles during that game. I'm doing my job and making the defense run. You know, that's my main goal for each game. So if that record comes to me, then it happens. If it doesn't, then it doesn't. As long as we win games, I'm happy.
Now, Ronnie, let's talk about your battles with the injuries. You had a couple setbacks in consecutive years. How did you get your mind right and be able to fight through that and come back bigger, better, badder, and stronger?
Oh, man, it was probably one of the toughest times of my life. I mean, two ACLs right when I went to college. I mean, I had a big decision to make, either stay and tough it out or keep playing or leave and start working or whatever I was going to do. But I ended up, I felt like I didn't give enough yet. I felt like I had a lot to prove in football, a lot to prove to myself. So I stuck it out and trained really hard and came back healthy, and here I am now. I mean.
Now, Ronnie, for any high school athletes, aspiring college football players that are on the cusp and trying to figure out where to take their college football career, what advice would you have for them to make it to the next level for college football?
Go to school. go to class. I mean, get good grades in school. I mean, college football, a lot of coaches look at that. See who's improving in the classroom. See who's doing good in the classroom. I mean, it's when they see that, they know that you can learn the game of football and study and understand it. So if you're not going to school, you're not going to learn that part of the football game. But that's what I think the biggest factor in to be good. So that's what I think.
Well, Ronnie, thanks for being on the show, man. And of course, we are wishing you all the best of luck. Eastern Washington making us proud all around the country, even here in Northern California, where it is Sac State Hornet country. I'm wearing my red with pride. And of course, you guys have Montana Western coming up on August 30th. And so, you know, again, good luck to you the remainder of the season. And, man, good luck to the team.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Go Eagles.
That's right. Thanks. Go Eagles. There goes Ron Hamlin, linebacker for the Eastern Washington Eagles. Sean Wally, man, what a tough and intimidating linebacker he is.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I was, like I said in the beginning of the interview, right behind the Eastern bench, running up and down the field on the track that you probably ran many times, Mr. Boyd, and, you know, dealing with cables and the TV camera cart on the near side, which for those that don't know, the near side is the home side on a football field. And, you know, Ronnie is out there getting six tackles, and a couple of them were bruising hits. And then one question I didn't get to was how much the 85-degree heat played a factor, because that he and a bunch of his teammates were on the bike. They were trying to stay loose. They were drinking Gatorade and water like crazy. And then they had guys on the training table getting rolled out, and seemed like cramps were an issue. But at the end of the day, they found a way to explode and win 56-35.
Man, there is nothing like coming into Cheney, Washington and embarking on Roos Field. And of course, you had mentioned me getting a chance to run on that track once upon a time. I can tell you the field wasn't red at the time, but it is, it's such nostalgia on that campus. I know a lot of universities have that nostalgia, but there's something about Eastern Washington University. There's something about, you know, hanging out at, you know, Showalter Hall and hanging out at the Union Building and all those things. And so, you know, I remember those fondly. But more importantly, man, the football team is taking care of business. And what is the most exciting is that they are number one in the country, Sean Wally.
Absolutely. That's a great, great moniker to have in the beginning of the season. And the toughest thing they're going to have all year is maintaining that. Because the only place to go is where?
Yeah.
Well, Eastern and all their players, all their great coaches, you know, Coach Baldwin as the head coach and then all his assistant coaches, they have to keep their players playing at a top level. And like Ronnie said, you know, we're the Super Bowl team. We're the championship team everybody is gunning for. Similar to the Seahawks in the NFL. Now it's like, okay, everybody wants to see how they match up against us being ranked number one. And I think it's going to be a fabulous game and a great test in two weekends when Eastern goes to Montlake and looks to invade the University of Washington.
Well, we know what happened a couple of years ago when Eastern did just that, went over to Montlake to play. And wow, almost pulled the game out. There were some last second heroics, of course, to where University of Washington pulled it out. But that is why I believe that this whole playoff structure for, you know, the FCS is something that has been long awaited. And so this has been something that's been going on for a while in Division I AA. And, you know, of course, Eastern Washington that year took out Oregon State last year. So there are no slouches to, you know, playing, you know, these top tier schools. And so I am so excited. But Mr. Wally, man, it has been a great show. Show number 67. We had Paul Gackle with the Gackle Report on and, you know, talking all things Bay. And then we had Art Teal talking about his book coming out this Thursday at FX McCrory's. The book is Standing Tall, talking about the 2 years in the NFL with Russell Wilson. Of course, we just had Eastern Washington University linebacker Ronnie Hamlin on. Of course, the Eastern Washington being number one in the country in NCAA football. And so it has been an awesome, awesome show, Mr. Wally.
You know, Sean, I cannot let this show close without saying a couple of things. So if I may have the floor for a moment, considering it is our show / partly my show, being able to go to Eastern Washington University and experience Cheney and the campus for the first time, it was a great experience. It's a great college town, college atmosphere, very similar to Pullman, in the middle of nowhere, although Spokane's close enough to have a good time. You know, Pullman has nothing else around it other than wheat fields. So really, Cheney should be the draw outside of Pullman. But here's the deal. One of our college and pro football insiders, Lamont Breifel, who's been on the show and he'll be on again here this football season, got his first taste of TV production work. And he did a good job. You know, he handled the parabolic dish for ESPN. And what was really cool is I got a chance to see really how good he was at Eastern, because he was plastered all over walls, plaques. He did great things from 97 to 01 for the Eagles before he was drafted by the Ravens in the National Football League. And so it was good to see where he was a giant among men, similar to how Ronnie Hamlin is doing now for Eastern. And not only that, but I have to send a shout out to SID of football and a few other sports at Eastern, Dave Cook, for setting this up last minute and getting Ronnie Hamlin to agree to do this interview. And, you know, I knew that Ronnie was from my hometown of Lacey, Washington, and I let Dave know I'd really like to talk to Ronnie, and he set it up, made it happen, and Ronnie agreed to it. Not only that, but Dave Cook also remembers Sean Boyd. Remembers Sean Boyd running track at Eastern Washington University back in the day. Back in the day when Sean Boyd was hanging with one John Kitna in the dorms playing video games, as we have talked about on this show. You know, not only was it a great weekend for myself working for ESPN and seeing the Eastern campus and the red field and a great game by the Eagles, but it let me come full circle with Lamont Breifel, bringing him back to Cheney and the field and the stadium and the campus he used to run. But guess what? Previous to that, Sean Boyd was running on the exact same track that I was huffing and puffing on, trying to haul cable with the TV cart for ESPN.
Oh, man. Sean Wally, thank you, man. Thank you so much for walking me down memory lane. And, you know, of course, Cheney always has a fondness. And, you know, that's where I went to school. And, of course, all of our listeners know that there were two stints of school for me, one at Auburn University down in Alabama and then at Eastern Washington University. And so, you know, there is a special, special place for Eastern. And of course, Dave Cook. I remember Dave Cook, I'm telling on myself, in the early 90s, you know, when I was running track there, and, you know, just a great atmosphere, a love all around. And, you know, a great institution to get an education in. So thank you again, Sean Wally, for that. I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm just excited about Eastern Washington, you know, keeping themselves not on the map, not putting themselves on the map, but keeping themselves on the map by doing some awesome things. And it's more than just sports. It's a very, very good academic school. And just as you said, you know, 15 minutes away from Spokane, I remember those times, those weekends, or, you know, to just, it was nothing. It was nothing just to get over there and, you know, and hop on the freeway and just 10 minutes, 15 minutes away here in Spokane. But, man, what a great show. What a great show. And before we go off the air here, Sean Wally, I want to send a shout out. I want to send a shout out to, my buddy Dale Dinkins, who is running things over at Verizon Wireless as we speak. And of course, we have some listeners, and Verizon has shown that they want to be a part of On the Double with the Double S Express. So Verizon Wireless and Howe Avenue, hey, special shout out to all of you who are listening, and thanks for listening to On the Double. Sean Wally, show 67 in the books, man. What say you?
Sean, it's been a great one, not only because we had three great guests, we've had good insight on baseball, football, pro, college, you name it, but also because I know exactly where that Hal Avenue store is in Sacramento. Verizon Wireless, the big B, for sure. Thanks for listening to On the Double.
Man, so show 67 in the books for Sean Wally and our engineer Don Newson. I'm Sean Boyd. We will see you next week. Have a great one, everyone.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.